Welcome. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Wiser. Since 2018, we've been telling the life stories of women surgeons and sharing advice for the next generation of diverse, forward-thinking, problem-solving surgeon leaders. Today, we are taking a look into a slightly different facet of surgery, anesthesia. Anesthesiologists are the life force of the OR, but more often than not, the work they do garners less attention than it truly deserves. Join us today as we take a look behind the drapes and examine the various roles and responsibilities that anesthesiologists take on to get the patient safely from pre-op to PACU. Let's dive in.
Hi, everyone. I'm Grace Nguyen, current M4 and Wiser podcast host and editor. Today, we are honored to have Dr. Holland with us. She is an esteemed faculty member in the anesthesiology department at Emory University, who specializes in cardiac anesthesia. Dr. Holland obtained her undergraduate degree at Auburn University and her medical degree from Louisiana State University. She completed both her residency and cardiac fellowship at Emory, and she currently serves as the vice chair of education at Emory's anesthesia department. So welcome, Dr. Holland, and thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Grace. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm excited to be here.
Great. So to start things off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what specifically drew you to medicine?
Yeah, I grew up in Louisiana, and I went to undergraduate at Auburn to major in engineering. While it's easy to look back and connect the dots after the fact, always isn't so easy to know why you did things when you were younger. And I think that when I was studying engineering, I really wanted something that was more interactive with people, and I wanted something where I felt like I could see the result of my work more quickly. And on a day-to-day basis, I went to medical school, and I went to medical school at LSU in New Orleans, which is where several members of my family had also gone to medical school. So it was a familiar place for me. And I loved medical school. I really enjoyed being in medical school. And during that time is when I decided to go into anesthesia.
Great. So can you elaborate more about why specifically you chose anesthesia and what you liked about the field?
Yeah, so I think when you're a medical student, it's really exciting to see everything and to learn everything going on each of the little roles and as you go through your rotation and trying to understand what it's like in each specialty is fun to do. But it can also be challenging to really know what any specialty is like when you are just observing it as a medical student. So I knew some that didn't feel like a great fit for me. Like I knew pretty quickly that I didn't to be in clinic all the time and that I liked procedure-based specialties. And I also knew that I liked being on my seat and moving around and having a lot of different variety of tasks throughout the day. So those are like workforce or workflow considerations. But also I really enjoyed the cerebral aspect of medicine as trying to understand the patient's diagnosis, the etiology, and then thinking through how to solve a problem or develop a treatment plan. And it felt like whenever I did anesthesia, it brought all those elements together for me. And I think one of the main things that drew me to anesthesia was how you are always thinking on your feet and solving problems. And you move from one thing to the next throughout the day, and you're able to see efforts of your work as your case unfolds right in front of your eyes. You're with your patient, you're taking care of them, and you can see how your treatment's going. So it really makes that kind of immediate feedback in both types of specialty. And then I've never been any other type of doctor, so I have really enjoyed being an anesthesiologist, and I have found it to be a really fulfilling and fun career. I'm really happy I have the chance to do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I feel like a lot of people don't really know what an anesthesiologist does day to day, especially you mentioned you're on your feet doing a lot of things, you're doing procedures, but it's also really cerebral. Can we just take a step back and can you describe what an anesthesiologist's roles and responsibilities both inside and outside the operating room look like?
Yeah, so it can be nuanced, and there are many different types of roles anesthesiologists can play. But the thing I normally say when I introduce myself to my patients is, my job is to make sure you're safe and to make sure you're comfortable while you're having a procedure. And we think there are patients who are not having procedures too in some settings, but in general, our job is to make sure our patients are safe while they are under the care of a surgeon or another proceduralist. And so this involves meeting them, creating a plan for them based on their medical history and based on the planned procedure and on their current kind of state when you see them. And then executing that care while you monitor them for complications and hopefully have a carefully laid plan to prevent the most common or expected complications. And then ensuring their comfort and their recovery from the procedure and from the all of these steps kind of work in lockstep hand in hand. There's also the consideration that as an anesthesiologist, you take care of multiple patients at the same time. So sometimes when I talk to people in social settings, they'll say, oh, you're an anesthesiologist. You don't have to talk to your patients or talk to anyone. And I'm like, well, that's very wrong. I talk to probably 100 people per day because not only do you need to talk to the pre-op staff, the operating room staff, the PICU staff, your colleagues, the surgical colleagues, you also need to talk to the patients and their families, and you don't really always have a long time to establish their trust and develop that rapport and let them know your role and that your focus is really on their safety and their comfort. And it can be a field where you really need good and effective and efficient communication skills and ability to quickly gain relationships with people and to get the information that you need. You also have to think on your feet and solve problems in real time. And the operating room staff, a lot of times, is relying on the anesthesiologist to keep things running, to keep all the moving parts moving. We run the schedule in the operating room. So who's going where, which case is going where, what makes the most sense for deploying the resources most effectively and getting the cases done. And so there's definitely an element of operational efficiency that goes into the role of an anesthesiologist because you need to prioritize what tasks need to be done, which patients need your attention right now, and obviously always keeping safety of mind to where you need to be. So it keeps you on your toes throughout the day. And I really like the moving parts of that.
For sure. I definitely feel like that's something really misunderstood. A lot of people think that anesthesiologists are usually just sitting in the ORs and not on their toes, moving around, a lot of moving parts, like you said, which is really interesting to hear. Can you talk more about some of the procedures that anesthesiologists do and what are the most common ones that you normally perform? And then what are some more, I guess, specialized procedures that you do or things that people wouldn't think that an anesthesiologist does?
Yeah, so anesthesia can be a pretty procedure-heavy specialty. And I touch all of my patients. I have my hands on all of my patients. And I'm always doing little things, even if it's not necessarily a procedure. But we are constantly paying attention to our patient and how we can make them the most comfortable and optimize their safety for the procedure. But obviously, one of the first things we need to take care of any patient is access. So that means we need a way to give them medications and fluids. And so obtaining intravenous access, we are specialists at that. So getting IVs or central lines. And depending on what kind of case we're doing or what is happening with the patient, that kind of dictates what type of access we need. We also may decide that we want to use invasive monitors. And that's one of the other main procedures that we do would be placing invasive monitors. So whether that's invasive arterial monitoring or whether it's something even more invasive, such as a pulmonary artery catheter or even sometimes we may place lumbar drains depending on the extent of the procedure. And then other procedures that anesthesiologists do typically have to do with pain management. So regional anesthesia and neuroaxial anesthesia, which includes anesthetizing any peripheral nerves and then anesthetizing or central nerves through epidurals or spinal. And then finally, there's, of course, all the procedures, which include the airway. And this is one of also our areas of expertise. So managing airways, whether it's just a two-port intubation or another more advanced technique, such as an awake fiber optic or a double lumen tube for a more challenging or difficult airway. And I always make the joke that an anesthesia 99 is not a good grade. It has to be 100 every time. We really hone these skills to a level, high level of expertise so that when a patient is with us, we know that we are doing everything we can and we have our skills polished as much as we can to keep them safe. Make sure that during a procedure, we have covered all the bases in terms of access monitors and airway that we are ready to handle anything that comes up.
That's awesome. And definitely a lot more nuanced and diverse procedures than I think a lot of people realize that anesthesiologists are experts at.
And the other thing for anesthesia that has been growing and I imagine will continue to grow is many anesthesiologists, including myself, do diagnostic imaging with echocardiography. I hold three echocardiography board certifications, so TEE and critical care echo and transthoracic echo. And the role of diagnostic imaging in the perioperative arena is growing and growing. So we are one of the very few physicians, and ED docs do this somewhat in different settings, of course, but who notice the problem that the patient has, decides to deploy diagnostic imaging, execute that diagnostic imaging herself, interpret it at the bedside, decide a management plan, deliver that management plan herself, monitor for the effects of it, and then iterate that procedure. Yes. So that's a pretty complicated cognitive chain of tasks that involves a lot of different skills and combining them all. And I think being able to do that at the bedside is an extremely rewarding way to take care of patients. And so I think not only are we able to provide more effective, efficient, medium care to our patients whenever we can do bedside diagnostic imaging, it's also really gratifying to be able to take care of patient right there, give them what they need, make sure they're safe.
For sure. That's really fascinating. And it leads into my next question. I know that you're fellowship trained in cardiac anesthesia. And for the listeners who might not be familiar, there are many fellowship options within the field of anesthesia, including cardiac, pain, critical care, pediatrics, obstetrics, regional, neuro, and transplant. So a lot more diversity within the field than maybe is commonly known.
Anesthesia is extremely diverse. You always tell medical students, your job as an anesthesiologist could mean you are the ICU attending, or it could mean that you run an outpatient day in clinic and see patients on your clinical day, or it could mean that you work at an ambulatory center doing outpatient procedures on healthy patients, or it could mean that you work in a high acuity operating room that runs 24/7. So the different roles of an anesthesiologist can vary a bit.
For sure. So can you talk us through a little bit your journey to finding cardiac anesthesia? Is that something that you knew coming into residency that you wanted to specialize in? And what did your fellowship look like?
Yeah, like I said before, I've never done anything besides anesthesia. I've never done another fellowship besides cardiac anesthesia. Of course, I'm biased towards it, and it is my preferred sector of anesthesia. But when I knew I was in my residency, I realized that I really loved the more involved cases. And one thing that I think is unique to cardiac anesthesia in some arenas is it's a lot more of a team sport in the operating room, in the fact that we do diagnostic imaging during the chase. And the surgeon really needs to interact with us and hear from us about what we think from the echo and from the hemodynamics. And there are multiple points during the case, depending on what type of case that's being done, where the whole team really needs to work together to achieve the outcomes have set out for the patient. So I think that the fact that it's a really dynamic operating room requires a lot of teamwork, and that cases are pretty complex and they require a good bit of planning, thinking, and executing quite a lot of elements simultaneously. Whenever I first started seeing it as a learner, I thought, gosh, I don't know if I'll ever reach this level of complexity. And I think that challenging yourself to keep going until you're able to master the more complex cases was something that I really enjoyed doing. It's not to say that I don't enjoy doing anesthesia for more simple cases as well. I think it can be gratifying to do both. I just wanted to do the fellowship to learn as much as I could about taking care of the most sick patient. And I think that having those skills, my first job at a fellowship, I worked at Grady. And in their role, I did cardiac anesthesia, but I also did general anesthesia, ambulatory anesthesia, obstetrics, pain and trauma, anything that came through the door. And I think that being able to have the skills to take care of sick patients that you learn in a cardiac fellowship really gave me a lot of confidence that I was trained to handle any type of emergency, any type of patient, and that I was confident that I could use my skills to take the best care of my patients in critical situations. I personally, like I said, I am biased, but there are all of the fellowships in anesthesia. I think people have reasons that they love each one of them. And probably if I had done another one, I would probably love too.
For sure. You mentioned really enjoyed or fascinated by more of the involved or complex cases. Can you tell the listeners what is a complex anesthesia case? What makes something a little bit more involved? Is it something about the patient? Is it different lines that they require?
Things in my mind that kind of determine the complexity of an anesthetic or of a patient. And this may be true for anesthesia and maybe in other arenas as well. And the first thing obviously is the patient itself. What is this patient's medical history? What are their current comorbidities? What disease states are they in? And where are they currently in that disease state? Is it managed? Is it unmanaged? Are they stable? Are they unstable? And patients with extreme amount of comorbidities, what they often see at Emory, which is a tertiary care hospital, can be difficult to manage because you can have competing priorities for their hemodynamics. They may be challenging to oxygenate or ventilate under certain settings. They may be challenging to obtain vascular access on them if they're vascular traps. They may have altered cerebral regulation. They may have altered metabolic state due to underlying disease. So the more comorbidities a patient has and the more uncontrolled those comorbidities are, the more challenges can be present in the perioperative space to managing them, keeping them safe, and maintaining their homeostasis. Another arena to me, which kind of dictates the complexity of a case, is procedure-specific concerns. What do we need to do to accomplish this specific procedure? If it's an intrathoracic case, we may need to isolate one lung from the other. We may need to drop one of the lungs. The surgeon may need to get access to the chest and the chest wing and create pressure inside the chest. All of these things create a lot of hemodynamic changes, which may be tolerable in an healthy patient and may not be tolerable in a more sick patient. So those two categories, patient-specific concerns and procedure-specific concerns, combined together. Obviously, the more invasive the procedure, then a lot of times it comes with more risk and more complexity in determining how to safely get a patient through it. However, ambulatory anesthesiologists, obstetric anesthesiologists, pain doctors, they can also be dealing with these extremely sick patients that have multiple comorbidities. And even a simple procedure that people may think is nothing, it can be very challenging to sedate someone safely for something like that, because you're going to disturb them from their normal homeostasis in a way that their body is not used to tolerating.
That's really cool for you to hear you break it down that way of, one, looking at it from the patient side of what are their comorbidities, and another side, what types of procedures are they going to require or specialized airway management. Changing the topic to earlier, you mentioning that you worked early on in your career at Grady Hospital in Atlanta. Can you talk more about what it was like to practice anesthesia at a level one trauma center like Grady and how it's different from your experience now working at Emory?
Yeah, it was a really exciting and fun time in my career, and I really loved those years practicing there. First of all, for those of you in the Emory system who know, Grady just has its own special energy. It has its own heart and soul. All the staff and faculty there are just incredible, and they really are dedicated to the mission of taking care of Grady patients. So being part of that team was just an awesome experience in terms of the culture and the purpose of taking care of the citizens in Atlanta. I really loved that role. The second thing I would say about my time at Grady is I just learned an incredible amount during those years. And that is because the variety of cases that I was exposed to. And I also had great leadership and great mentorship, not only from the anesthesiologists in my own department, who were role models and teachers to me, but also from the surgeons, the trauma surgeons. And during those years, I learned so much in all these different situations, because many times you are thrown into uncontrolled situations where we are doing our best to the best possible outcome, but we didn't have much control over the start of the case because it's an emergency. Or you have many patients who don't seek regular medical care and you don't have a lot of information about their background, so you're flying blind and you need to optimize things the best you can on your feet with what you have. And so I think really the atmosphere of teamwork and the variety of cases, the variety of patients, complete diversity of medical pathologies that you get to see there is really an incredible learning opportunity. And then the people in my own department that trained me, that taught me, were just incredible. And I really feel like my time there was really an extension of my training in a way, because But your first years as an attending is such a huge time for growth. I'm so grateful that I got to have that experience at Grady, and I really truly loved it. And then as I advanced in my career and I turned to focus more on education, I decided to switch my clinical practice to 100% cardiac. And so now my job is 100% cardiac and thoracic cases at Emory. And it's a completely different setup, but also one that has been really fun for me. And when I came from Grady back to Emory, I got to learn a lot of things. They were certainly doing more things at Emory that are beyond the complexity that is undertaken at Grady, just in terms of the mechanical circulatory support and more complex cardiac procedures. I start to learn, and I get to learn all the time, a lot of new things and continue to expand my skill set. And I think that working in a high acuity area like this, where we are always taking on maybe new procedures, new devices, on pushing the boundaries of advanced cardiac surgery, is really an exciting thing for anyone, because you get to keep learning and keep evolving. And I learn new things all the time, which is one thing that I think really keeps me engaged in what I'm doing.
It's really cool to hear the growth that you even have had post formal training as a resident and fellow, even in the early years of being an attending. It sounds like the learning never stops.
I reflect back on things and I realize I'm always growing and changing, and I'll change my mind about things that I've thought for a long time after I get more experience under my belt. And then I'll have new experiences and I'll learn something new and I'll change my mind again. So I think that we are always evolving, and one of the best things you can do as a physician is keep your mind open to learning new things, because we can always develop more.
For sure. You mentioned how the first few years out of formal training, it felt like an extension of your training. What do the roles and responsibilities of an attending anesthesiologist look like compared to when you're a trainee?
I think for anesthesia and for every specialty, when you become the attending, you are ultimately the responsible party for your patient. And no matter how much you're prepared, that moment isn't there until you are the last stop. In anesthesia, specifically working at a trauma hospital and being in the operating room, sometimes you are the last stop. You are the person who is in charge of saving this patient's life in a dangerous situation or an unexpected situation. And when you're in training, you have someone behind you who can rescue you and guide you and help you. And when you're the attending, you are that person. So it's definitely a step up in terms of responsibility. And I think it takes some time for all attendings to get used to this responsibility and to adjust to the demands of that cognitive and kind of emotional responsibility that you take on for your patients. Another key difference with our residents in the operating rooms and the attendings who are not sending their own cases is the resident is sitting the case and staying with the patient throughout their entire course. They see the patient in pre-op, they take them to the operating room, they put them to sleep, they stay with them and monitor them and handle anything that comes up, manage all of their medical needs during the case, then they wake them up and manage them in the post-op unit. Whereas the attending is managing multiple patients at one time, including the ones that are yet to start their surgery and including the ones that are finished with their surgeries for the day. And then in the cardiac arena, we may be also doing echoes for other patients or consulting with other HRT or other physicians in order to help make plans for patients that may not be right in front of us at the moment. I think that it's hard to explain what happens when you make that transition, but I think that training, it's one reason that we train so long and we focus so much energy on our residents and getting them ready to get to that point, because it is a huge transition and it is a great responsibility to take care of people and take that all in yourself. And I do think that my residency made me ready for that when I graduated. Emotionally, it's something you have to adjust to learning and doing on your own.
Definitely. I feel like I've heard, no matter whether it's from anesthesiologists or people in other specialties, that the first few years of your attendingship, it's a new transition that you have to get used to.
Yeah. Even though it can be a steep learning curve and a challenging time, I think that it's actually a really rewarding time in your career. And I feel like most early attending physicians really enjoy those years. Now you're focusing on executing the care. You've learned how to do the care, and now you are taking on a new role. It's fitting.
That's awesome. So you mentioned that you work pretty closely with residents. Can you tell us more about your decision to work in academic medicine and how you balance your time between your academic responsibilities and your clinical time?
Yeah. So when I was pretty early in my career, I realized that I really love teaching. And it's one of my favorite parts of my job is helping someone understand something that they didn't understand before, or helping them come to a realization about some truth that they didn't know before. And I just loved seeing the students and the residents grow and their progress through over time and through their rotations and through their years of training, and even seeing now that I have a few more years under my belt, even seeing young into things develop, I really just feel like that is such a fulfilling part of my job that I love. So knowing that's what gave me a lot of personal joy, I decided to focus my career more in that arena. And in my role as Vice Chair of Education, I get to support all of our training programs, including our residency and our fellowship in our AA program, as well as all of the educational efforts to our whole department, like our grand rounds or any other CV offerings that we have. And this is really fun for me. I love to do it. And I love to get feedback and see what's working for people and try to update our offerings to get our learners more engaged, because something that's been happening to learners and to all of us is as we've undergone transformation into more of a digital era, the characteristics of today's learners are different from the learners 20 years ago. I would venture to even say they're different from the learners 10 years ago. And I've gotten really interested in this and how we can most effectively train our trainees, as well as keep our faculty engaged with ongoing learning. So right now I am in the process of getting my master's in education from Johns Hopkins, and I'm really enjoying learning about educating the health professions and so we can focus our efforts for training to be as effective as possible to engage our adult learners and guide them as effectively as we can to mastery, master physician skill. So that is something I really get to focus on a lot in this role, and I really love doing. My other education interest, as that I might have alluded to a little bit, is technology in education. And I also am part of, I started this group with several other physicians from other institutions that we named ourselves Target. It's the Anesthesia Research Group for Education Technology. And we focus on developing tools for precision education that are going to be targeted towards anesthesiology learners. This is an exciting space where not a lot of work has been done yet, but there's a great amount of potential. And I'm really learning a ton as we explore this area as how we could create platforms and tools that can help target educational material and customize educational experiences. A lot of different things going on with my educational efforts in this role, and that keeps me on my toes and certainly takes up a good bit of time.
Yeah, that's really great to hear. It sounds like you are continuing to still pursue that passion, but getting further education and doing research efforts in the field of education. So usually at the end of our episodes, we usually like to transition to getting to know our guests a little bit more outside of their work. And if you don't mind telling us more about what your life looks like outside of the hospital and how you balance your personal responsibilities with being an anesthesiologist.
Yeah, I love being an anesthesiologist. Like, I try to maintain that it is my job, it's not my life. And I am really fortunate. I am married to an awesome guy, and we met at college, and we have three kids. My kids are now 9, 6, and 4. They take up a good bit of my time, but I have a lot of different interests. I'm extremely social. I love being around people. I love knowing about people. I love spending my time with friends and meeting new people. I like entertaining. My husband and I bought a home that needs a lot of work, so we spend a good bit of time working on projects around our home. We like to cook, and we like to have friends over. And then I am a pretty avid exerciser. I've been a runner for a long time. I also play tennis. And I will pretty much do any outdoor activity as needed to keep ship. In fact, now that the end of summer is coming at, I'm getting really excited for being outside in the fall because I've been getting pretty hot. Right now, my main running is I meet with a group of friends at 5:30, and we run 5 miles. Home by 6:15, and I can shower and get to the hospital before 7.
I feel like that's a good mix of like good social time, but also getting your exercise in.
Yeah, the accountability really helps me. And since I have some my same running group every time, we really get to enjoy catching up with each other.
That's great. And just to end off the episode, do you have any advice for current or future female anesthesiologists?
Yeah, I think that career can be very demanding. And I think it's also important to realize that it can be extremely rewarding. And I'm often really grateful that I have this career, not only because it gives me a lot of fulfillment, but it gives me a lot of the ability to have financial security, the ability to feel like I contribute to my society by doing something good. And it also allows me to set an example for my children. And beyond that, it is something that I enjoy doing. So I think that first thing to do is to be grateful that you have the opportunity to do this kind of career, because not everyone in the world gets to do something like this. And even though we've worked hard to earn it, is still an incredible opportunity. And then I think the next thing is you have to take your job seriously, but you don't always have to take yourself so seriously. And you need to remember to live your life and enjoy your time, do things that make you happy, and always prioritize people in your life and the things that are important to you as your focus, because we can get distracted by the demands on us and lose focus on the things that are most important. So I think I would tell everyone to take their career seriously, but try not to take themselves too seriously.
I love that. Thank you so much, Dr. Holland, for joining us today for another episode of Wiser. We loved hearing about your life and your career and are excited for our listeners to get to know you.
Thanks so much, Grace. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Wiser. If you liked this episode, please rate and leave a review as it helps others find the show. You can also share with friends and family. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Wiser Podcast for updates.
This episode was hosted by Grace Wynn. Production and editing support comes from Grace Wynn and Megan Wasson. Music and editing software courtesy of Descript.